Now, broadcasting on Star Worldwide Networks, it's time for the Fashion Rewired broadcast with Brian Hill. During the Fashion Rewired podcast, we chat with successful fashion designers and business entrepreneurs who share their powerful stories of success while providing real-time industry tips, tools, and actionable strategies to execute today with the goal of designing our listeners' brands for success. Now, here's your host, Brian Hill.
Welcome to Fashion Rewired. I'm your host, Brian Hill, self-taught designer and executive director of Phoenix Fashion Week. So why is it important to rewire? Well, I believe that every successful fashion designer and entrepreneur at one time or another made the smart and necessary decision to rewire their brain, their attitude, but most importantly, their actions to get them to their current level of success. Each week, I get to share stories of transformation with our listeners while giving you the blueprint to rewire. I love to open each episode by thanking the sponsors that believe in Fashion Rewired. The Custom Shop. As you know, before my rewire, I launched and ran my own fitness apparel brand. Now today, I consult, invest in, and private label design and manufacture custom apparel for brands across the nation. Does your brand need unique, high-quality lifestyle apparel like t-shirts, hats, leggings, and more with your branded logo or slogan? Or do you need real-time consultation on your brand? Reach out to me for more information and custom apparel quotes. Email info@phoenixfashionweek.com. My next guest, Hassan Pierre, calls three cities home: Miami, New York City, and London. Hassan started out as a Parsons School of Design student where he studied design and management. Hassan quickly launched his own label, The Way It Should Be, by upcycling high-end vintage fabrics into new one-off pieces before founding Maison de Mode with his partner Amanda, a brand that now exists for the love of sustainability and fashion. The brand believes in empowering individuality with the mission to be the global platform for sustainable fashion, connecting creators, curators, and consumers for a better tomorrow. As a better pioneer of the sustainable fashion movement, Hassan has extended his experience and voice to numerous panel discussions, including the 2015 NGO conference at the United Nations, South by Southwest, the Bloomberg Sustainable Business Summit, the Future Sustainability Summit, Future of Fashion Summit, and Harvard Business School's Retail and Luxury Goods Conference in 2021. Additionally, Hassan now holds a position on the board of Well-Beings of Environmental and Animal Conservation NGO, and is also a member of the CFDA Awards Guild. Recently, Hassan wrote a thought piece on energy efficiency within the retail space for the CFDA.com. Always a favorite guest on many platforms from Spotify to Forbes, Hassan's mission for Maison de Mode is to be a beacon of inspiration for emerging fashion talent, design talent, who want to create the most luxurious, innovative, and sustainable designs. Hassan, that is a heck of a career that you've built. Oh, man.
Thank you so much for having me.
When you hear all the different things you've done in such a short amount of time, how do you feel?
It's really interesting when it's laid out that way. it feels like I'm still just starting on my journey, although I've done so much, but it always feels like every day is the beginning.
Wow. I'm impressed. I can't wait till we dig in. Why sustainability? Why fashion? Why now, right? And when you say now, in 2022, you guys were already here at 2015 before the world thought it made sense. So I want to really get into that in a minute. But I want to go back and I want to hear one fun fashion fact about Hassan Pierre that nobody knows.
One fun fashion fact is that some of my closest and best friends in my personal life, I met through my professional life in the fashion space.
Excellent, excellent. So you built friendships within fashion before you even got there.
Yes, you could say that. Friendships, which are almost like family.
Yeah, good for you, good for you. I like that fact. So, you know, we talked about how we all got here, Fashion Rewired. Things have to happen differently in your life. You're going one direction, right? You graduated from Parsons. You got your label. Things are good. You're upcycling. People are happy. You're selling. It's cool. But then you have a rewire moment where things have got to change for whatever reason. Can you take us back to your rewire moment and what happened?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I had left Parsons and launched my own label, which was a sustainable label at the time. And during that process of growing my own collection and understanding how the industry was reacting to quote-unquote ethical or sustainable fashion at the time, mm-hmm. I quickly realized that there was really this empty void in the retail landscape that catered to brands that fit this mold of not just being inherently beautiful, but also having some sort of ethical trait to it as well. Mm-hmm. And so that was really my moment of aha, where I was like, there aren't enough retail doors that are interested in what I'm doing. Although there's definitely a draw from consumers to shop this way. Mm-hmm. And also just noticing the industry of fashion gravitating towards this movement.
Got it. So I can only imagine the conversations you had when retailers care about low, 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 price, low, 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 cost, low. And you were talking about another perspective they should have, which is ethical fashion, right? Sustainable fashion, helping on not human beings only, but also the planet. Man, some of those early conversations must have been struggling for you.
It's funny because they actually were. And people thought that I was crazy. And when I say I, often also my partner, Amanda, as well, because she was very much, when I was designing sustainably, she was an editor focusing on sustainable fashion. So when we got together to create this retail platform, I mean, people really thought we were doing something totally out of the radar. People were just comfortable with it from a food perspective, but it yet to be anywhere near a norm in the fashion space. So there were some early adopters of the luxury space, as always that is, but generally people really found this to be an idea that they couldn't really wrap their head around.
Right. Growing up in Haiti, and again, you're into sustainable food first, right? Organic food. And that kind of sparked your interest, and you almost merged the organic side of food into fashion, right? And because you were maybe ahead of the time a bit, tell me what was the first kind of breakthrough conversation where a retailer that was completely no suddenly was listening to you?
So when I had my collection, Vogue, with the help of Tawny Goodman and Anna Wintour, launched a page called Style Ethics that they were dedicating the entire page to a brand that was doing something with value, ethical value. Mm-hmm. So I was very lucky, and they were very supportive of me. And featured one of my dresses on Kerry Washington at the time with a really great article about the ethics behind the dress and the brand and my designs. Mm. And a retailer named Fred Siegel, which is still around, and this is back in 2008 or 2009, so it's very, very hot of a store. It still is.
Yep.
Approached me to carry the collection, and that was really where I was like, wow, you know, this really has something if a retailer that I truly admire and value is willing to invest in this brand.
Right. That aha moment, then to get a brand as big and as credible as Fred Siegel on board, was amazing. And you know how it is, right? When a leader steps up and does the right thing, other people below that waterline of Fred Siegel also come a little easier, I would imagine. It was still probably tough for you to turn that curve, but it was a little easier saying it's already happened in Fred Siegel, and then all the people that read the article and were embraced by that. How did that go?
So it was actually the opposite effect.
Oh, okay.
So because sustainable fashion was so new, retailers, just like the editors were singling out one fashion brand each month instead of having sustainable fashion throughout all of the pages. Mm-hmm. It was one page, one designer each month. Mm. So that's how the retailers actually approached it as well. So if Barney's had John Patrick Organic, then Fred Siegel had me, and then Neiman Marcus had Stella McCartney, then, you know, Saks had, you know, Lem Lem from Leah Cabete. Mm-hmm. So that's how it worked. So that was also where the aha moment came, where I realized that if I could put all of the brands under one roof, mm-hmm. from a retail perspective, it would really move the entire conversation forward so that people understood that sustainable fashion was actually luxury. Because if all of these 10 brands are in the pages of Vogue, mm-hmm. they're all carried in these luxury specialty boutiques and stores. Mm-hmm. If they were all in one specific retail space, it would only prove that this is actual luxury. And so that's what I sought out to do.
Oh, I love it. So each of the major retailers back then were having one brand, almost a silo, and they'd have their box checked. Like, we have sustainability. Yep. We have Stella McCartney. We have Hassan Pierre. Okay, gotcha. And then under one, well, I love it. So now you're doing well with your label. You now have had a couple different aha moments. You're starting to rewire. When you make the decision that I'm going to put under one umbrella, under one roof, partner with Amanda, who was at the time editor for Marie Claire, right? I want to hear about the very first step you took, that action step, to make this happen, Maison de Mode.
So after Amanda and I met at my showroom, she came to do a really great article on me for Marie Claire after she had seen my article in Vogue. We developed a great personal friendship, and that goes back to my earlier statement about how some of my closest friends have become almost family that I met through fashion. And mm-hmm. so after she did this article and we developed this personal friendship, I have had this idea of this store, you know, this concept store, and mainly around a pop-up, because pop-ups, this is it now in probably 2011 or 2012, this was, mm-hmm. and pop-ups were just becoming sort of a concept and trend that brands were engaging with, but nobody was launching a retail brand, let alone a multi-label retail brand, with the business model of popping up places. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. as trying to be a disruptor in the retail space, that's what I came up with. And so I call Amanda and I said, hey, I got this space in Miami. It's Art Basel. It's at the Soho House. So it was like a really high traffic, luxury, great, you know, on brand space. Mm-hmm. I want to do this store and I want to invite XYZ designers, which were John Patrick Organic, Leah Cabete with Lem Lem, Bono with his wife Ali, mm-hmm. Houston with Eden, Suno, and, you know, Stella McCartney, maybe six, or I think there might have been eight of us in total. Mm-hmm. And I want to do this store, this pop-up, and would you curate the shop? What do you think? And she was like, this is really crazy because I have the same idea.
Oh.
And she's like, and I've never been able to put it together, you know, in context like this, but this is what I've been wanting to do. And I have a whole list of brands and that I've been writing about, and let's do it. So the editor and the designer with no retail experience got together. We called all the brands that we had relationships with. Mm-hmm. And we did our first pop-up in December of 2012, and it was really successful.
All right.
We sold a bunch of merchandise, and that was really step one of where we got to today.
Love it. Share your idea with a trusted friend or partner, right? You did that, and beginning by sharing or being transparent, she also had the same idea. You know, sometimes people want to package their ideas and not tell anybody ever. But if you would have, you know, kept that to yourself, you wouldn't have known that Amanda was thinking down the same road. So bravo for that. So now you go out and do this pop-up. You call the brands and put this idea together. You have some success. It's a pop-up now. So what do you do next? When you come home from that successful pop-up in Miami, what was step two?
So step two was identifying mistakes that we made, which were not having a fitting room or mirrors. Although we're both luxury consumers ourselves and shop all the time, we're not retailers inherently. And so there were little logistical things that we needed to get right for the next one. But we loved the fact that we were planning to open during cultural events outside of Fashion Week, mm-hmm. so that we didn't compete with the fashion industry, but rather we were a complement to an art week or an entertainment week. So mm-hmm. after our Basel in Miami, we went over to New York and we opened up our second pop-up there at the Hole Gallery during something called Freeze Art Week, mm-hmm. which is another art week similar to Art Basel, and we did our second pop-up there. This time with the fitting room, this time with full-length mirrors, and just elevated the experience that we did the first time and found ourselves with another successful pop-up.
So it sounds to me that not only did you go back and just analyze your numbers, analyze the entire experience, but then you also identify your niche of these pop-up shops. Like you said, going into art-forward or entertainment-forward events and paralleling versus a fashion week. That was ingenious.
Thank you. I mean, it sounds, you know, in the short term, it was very much a side project for the both of us. So, you know, these were like short ideas that we had, you know, and in the grand scheme, when you look at it in a long trajectory, it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't something that we initially thought of, like, this is our first step to getting 10 years down the road.
Right. Okay. So step three, now you've got two under your belt, both successful. The retail experience is a little bit better. You sharpen up your I's, dot your T's, all those things. What's step three for the launch of Maison de Mode?
So step three is being approached actually by a major developer in Las Vegas who have a fantastic mall called The Crystals, which is the most luxury mall in Las Vegas that has all the top luxury retail spaces, and had seen our concept shop that we had done and thought sustainability was an interesting concept personally, and taught me something about a dark door which these developers have, which essentially is a store that is not actively in use and rent. And so they can only have a certain percentage of those before their other tenants like Louis Vuitton or Cartier start to get upset that they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in rent to be next to stores that are empty.
Right.
So I learned that developers could, you know, we developed this deal with this certain developer, and it was a marketing sort of dollar for them, and they developed our whole store. We said, if you would like us to come to your shop, well, here's what you need to produce for us and do for us and get us there. And, you know, they agreed to all of our terms, and we did our next shop, and which was wildly successful. And from there, we both sort of sat down and did another pop-up in Miami Art Basel, and another pop-up after that in Washington, D.C., and kept doing these shops, you know, 2 to 3 times a year until we got to a point where it was one of our Art Basels, and we had about like 6 or 7 or maybe 10 or somewhere around a dozen people emailing us saying that, hey, you know, we're not going to be in Art Basel this year, but I bought this bag or these sunglasses or these caftans, whatever it was, and could you send me photos of what you have, and I'll give you my credit card and you can ship it to us. And so we sat to ourselves and we thought, well, we've been doing this successfully for about 2.5 years. The movement and trend in the industry continues to grow. The trend in consumers are continuing to grow in terms of their interest in sustainable fashion. What if we quit our day jobs and really lean into becoming retailers and not become a traditional retailer, but become an omni-channel retailer. So our brick and mortar flagship would be an online space where all of our customers that we've met from all these different pop-ups around the world could shop 24/7. Mm-hmm. And we would continue to do these experimental brick and mortar retail pop-ups to support the platform.
Oh man.
And that was where we got to the next phase.
Yeah. Yeah. You align with strategic partners, right? That developer from Las Vegas, that was paramount. And, you know, kudos to him for seeing something in what you guys had already done. But when people start calling you and saying, there's literally no website for it, but if you send me pictures, I'll give you my credit card. You really knew then, like, okay.
There's something. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So we always know that when people put action together, like for you, you shared your idea with a future partner and friend. You identified, looked in the mirror at some mistakes that you guys had made. Then you captured this niche market of going to art-focused events, entertainment-focused events, and then you align with these strategic partners. We know that when you do these kinds of actions, all kinds of great things happen. It's evident for what you guys have done. We also know that some natural habits have come out of that time from 2012 to now. Can you talk about some habits, Hassan, that you now still do because of the actions you took back in 2012-ish?
Yeah, I think the number one habit we do is really being thoughtful about what we do. Mm-hmm. And I say that because when that initial opportunity came up, it could have been very easy for somebody to just go ahead and jump at the initial offer and not really contemplate and think about it and maybe come back with, you know, a different offer that was more appealing to your own self. And so Amanda and I are really interesting because we're so different, but yet we share the same vision. Mm-hmm. And so checking in with one another is really something that we still do today for every decision that we make. Mm-hmm. As a company. And that was a habit that was really formed, I think, in that initial moment.
Wow. Just being thoughtful about what we're doing.
Yeah.
Not jumping at the flashy things so quickly. So can you tie, I think so, something or maybe the biggest accomplishment that you can tie back to this habit? If you look at the last 10 years, Hassan, what's, because of the habit of being thoughtful, right, and not jumping too soon, what's the biggest accomplishment you guys have tackled?
I think the biggest accomplishment that we tackled, I would say, was bringing on our third partner, who is not only another professional relationship, but it's also developed into a very personal relationship with both of us. And that was done by Amanda and I fundraising and doing a small seed capital raise of about $700,000 or $500,000 or something. Mm-hmm. When we decided to fully go forward with this idea of quitting our day jobs and developing this retail platform. Mm-hmm. And through that, we met our lead, an angel investor, who became our third partner, who has been instrumental and pivotal in guiding us to the business and place that we are today.
Oh, man. I'm writing this down. I love that. But also, you guys, for 2.5 years, were doing it. You guys were actually moving product, getting people involved. Like I said, making some mistakes, being okay with that. When you made some of those initial mistakes, and maybe Stella McCartney was like, where's our dressing room or whatever, how did you kind of deal with any of those kind of like maybe elementary mistakes in the beginning while you were still trying to come up with this really cool concept that really had legs? How did you deal with that? Because, you know, sometimes people will give up on those kinds of like little mini mistakes.
Well, we always looked at, nothing was ever a criticism. It was always, you know, trying to make things better. So that's, and I think that's something that both Amanda and I share, is that we're okay with being experts in what we know, and we're okay with getting expertise from individuals who know things better than we do,
mm-hmm.
in, to a degree, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when there was something, you know, when it was our first time and we didn't maybe merchandise the thing correctly and they sent us back their notes, we would just correct it and fix it and keep going on. And nothing ever really sort of deterred us, you know, to be like, oh no, this is the end of it, you know?
Right, right. You listened to real true feedback, right? You got experts in your corner and you just corrected and fixed and kept going. Experts in your corner.
Yep.
I love that. Believe it or not, as quick as it is, we're at the halfway point of the podcast, Hassan. So the first half, I know, phenomenal. What we're going to do right now is thank our sponsors, come right back. I'm going to put you in the garment district, okay, which is rapid fire questions. Are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
All right. Hang on one sec.
The Emerging Designer Bootcamp Live. Are you the next IT emerging apparel or accessory designer? Are you struggling with sales or manufacturing issues? Each year, Phoenix Fashion Week travels the nation and hand selects emerging fashion talent to enter the very challenging 3-month-long Designer Bootcamp Live, leading to the top fashion runway in October and the coveted title of Designer of the Year. To apply, email designer@phoenixfashionweek.com.
All right, we're back. I'm Brian Hill, director of Phoenix Fashion Week and the host of Fashion Rewired, the podcast. I'm on with my friend Hassan Pierre of Maison de Mode. What he's doing and has done in the fashion and sustainability space is amazing. And he's giving us a blueprint on how we can rewire and attack our brands sustainably or ethically. And retailers can do a better job. Thank you so much, Hassan, so much for being here. How are you feeling still?
I'm feeling great. Thank you for having me. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it's fun just to kind of relive what you've done in these 10 years plus. And again, I think you probably forget how many great things you did. And some people say you're lucky, but I think you're blessed. But also you were intentional the entire way. And when someone is intentional like you and Amanda have been, good things happen for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. So in the garment district, I'm going to ask you a phrase, and all you can answer is underrated or overrated. Fair?
Fair.
Okay. Social media, underrated or overrated?
Underrated.
Okay. Formal education, underrated or overrated?
Underrated.
Okay. Capital, seed money, underrated or overrated?
Overrated.
Overrated. Okay. Who you know, underrated or overrated?
Underrated.
True. Very true. Networking, underrated or overrated?
Underrated.
Underrated. Because you're a food connoisseur, fast food, underrated or overrated?
Overrated.
And lastly, phone conversations, underrated or overrated?
Underrated.
Underrated. Good call. Okay, cool. I love getting a snapshot of your personality and how you attack business and fashion. We also know in these businesses that we talk to, these entrepreneurs, they're either going to be in a category that we would call wholesale, which you know what that is, distribution, selling to stores, etc. Or are you a retail play? More at Maison de Mode, which is direct to consumer. How would you categorize Maison de Mode, wholesale or retail first?
Retail.
Retail, direct to consumer. Love it. Why is that your focus? Because in the beginning, when you felt that retailers, like Fred Siegel, right, that carried you and your brand, why wasn't the play to go there and have these sustainable products to go to more stores and more retailers?
What I recognized and what I noticed even before I launched my label, which is why I launched my label called The Way It Should Be and had it focused on ethics, was that the world didn't need another Hassan Pierre label.
Mm.
And the world actually didn't need another dress or skirt or jacket. And so as much as I personally enjoyed doing that, the world didn't need it. And so I chose to go the opposite way of being a retailer, because I knew that people weren't going to stop shopping, but if I could allow them to buy better, mm-hmm. it would probably have a better impact in the end.
Got it. The world didn't need another dress. The world didn't need another Hassan Pierre. Okay, I love it. So how about this question? When it comes to a sales platform, what is the number one sales platform that drives sales for Maison de Mode, and why?
I would say that Instagram is our number one, mm-hmm. just because I think, as you know, it's everybody's on their phone at all times, and it's a global world, and you have the lights on 24/7 all around the world. And so it really is the simplest thing, especially when you're an online retailer, to connect to consumers.
Right. Agreed. So social media, you said underrated, and Instagram is the number one sales platform to drive sales for Maison de Mode. Who are you following social media wise and why?
I have a private social media account, so I follow just friends and family. and it's not that exciting, to be honest.
Got it. Okay. So you're not, even in your private account, you're not surfing around and seeing what that sustainable person is doing or what Barney's is doing on social?
Well, I have certain friends on there that are in the space, but no, I use really Twitter for more informational knowledge around that, just to aggregate sort of news. Mm-hmm. But no, I don't really use Instagram. Amanda is really great at using it for discovery and all of that, so I really sort of, that's her sort of wheelhouse. So
yeah, that's good.
That's why we're a good team.
So we put you guys on an island, you and Amanda, and you've got one go-to resource that's going to help Maison de Mode succeed. What would be the only resource, if you only had one, that would drive the business still?
I would say social media, for sure.
It would be. Still social media, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not on an island, but that's good to know. Sometimes with these young brands that listen to the podcast, they don't have the resources or the time or whatever. And so we're always trying to help them to prioritize where they should put some of their energy. So social media, thank you for that. With all you've done in the last 10 years, but you were a student, obviously, at Parsons, can you recommend a couple books that our listeners can read to succeed that have helped you?
Oh wow. It's really interesting, and I have to be quite honest here, is that I actually haven't found one sort of like guiding book that really I've used in my work experience. There's many great books that I've read, but I haven't really found one that I think in particular that I've could suggest people. And it's a very interesting question that I get asked quite often.
And in those books that are maybe non textbook or non business books, how about something that helps you in your psyche or your life or even mental?
I actually really love Amanda Gorman's book that she did, or her book of, I guess, poems, you should say. Mm-hmm. I meditate quite often, and sometimes I just pick up and read one of her little poems, and they're quite great.
Awesome. I'm going to look that up. Amanda Gorman's. Okay. Another down that same line, is there a meditation book you'd recommend?
I don't. I actually just do personal meditation. I don't use any sort of guides or anything like that.
Excellent. So I'm going to take you back to Haiti, okay? A much younger Hassan Pierre, okay? And if you're going to give the younger Hassan some real good advice, you know, 9 years old, to get Hassan to the current level of success you have now, but way faster, what would you tell young Hassan?
I would to get there faster?
Yeah. Same success level, but faster.
Oh, wow. I would say slow down.
That's interesting. Okay. What did you feel you went too fast in when you were younger?
I think I just always reacted fast about everything. And, it's great. It's nothing I would ever change, but I do think to get there faster, if I would have just been more thoughtful in many instances, then probably would have helped.
Yeah. Yeah. Reactive. And what you were saying is be proactive. And when you talked about some of your actions and some of your habits, that is what you've put into your business, right? And this part of your life, which is really cool. When we talk to people and they go back to their younger selves, they give this advice and they didn't realize that they actually have been doing the advice to get them to the success they are now. They just kind of forgot. And so if people, when they're young, can identify some of these tips and tools that our guests talk about, and they can maybe incorporate them into their lifestyle sooner, they can also have some success. So thank you for sharing that. How about a thought of why should people rewire?
Why should people rewire? Because if the times are changing, the times are always changing. And if you are wired for the same way forever, you will never be innovative or able to change perspective or shift course. Oftentimes, you might be able to do something for a long time in the same way, but there comes a moment where if you're not ready to be adaptive to new circumstances, you can very easily fall behind.
No question. What else can you be excited about you can share with us for the second half of 2022 with yourself or Maison du Monde or both?
Well, we have our Future of Fashion Summit, which is our annual summit that we do coming up in November.
That's right.
It's a one-day conference with really exciting keynotes with cultural figures and icons across the fashion and entertainment space with the theme of sustainability. And so that'll be taking place on November 8th at Hearst Tower, and we're very much looking forward to that.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I'm putting that down. And we will help spread the word for that now and closer to November. How can our listeners find you and also Maison du Monde?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at Hassan Pierre, or they can find us at Maison du Monde, www.maison-de-mode.com.
All right. As always on Fashion Rewired, you can upload your free Hassan Pierre blueprint of his rewire, or you can follow his 1-2-3 action steps, or simply be inspired by what Hassan's already done. Simply go to like us on Instagram at Fashion Rewired, send me a DM, and you'll get a chance at war merch, the blueprint of Hassan Pierre. Hassan, thank you so much for today. It was amazing. The sustainability thing is growing faster and faster every day. Thank you so much for planting your flag in 2012 and before that.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks a lot. This was Fashion Rewired, the podcast, and we're out.
Thank you for joining us for our weekly 30-minute podcast focused on the business of fashion. Fashion Rewired is all about the successful transformation of your mind, perspective, and daily approach to your fashion brand. Make sure you listen next week for the Fashion Rewired podcast with Brian Hill.